de Saguenay, 5 heures de route à peu près, là, vous pouvez aller faire un tour.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on Thursday, August 26th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests. Emily Monet presents the Trilingual Okinum at Centaur Theatre.
People should be hearing the sounds of language, because it's the languages that are born from this territory. So it's really important that we have space to include them.
Myriam Larose of Festival Marionnette Plein la Rue.
It's so vivid, it's so impressive to see an object without life coming to life for everyone. Like, you don't know about puppetry, but you appreciate that.
And Gazette Theatre critic Jim Burke looks ahead to the fall season.
The big pause that people have been undergoing have kind of made people think more about what theatre is for and how they can, you know, entice audiences back, because, you know, get them away from Netflix binges. So I think theatre companies are maybe thinking quite hard about not just the material they're going to put on, but how to make it a kind of, you know, make the whole experience of going to the theatre feel more an event, maybe.
Before we begin, a few updates. This past Tuesday, the provincial health minister unveiled plans for the COVID passport app. It's called VaxiCode, and it works on smartphones. You upload your vaccine status with a QR code you should have received after your doses, and starting in just a few days, on Wednesday, September 1st, it will be obligatory to present the app in order to access non-essential services, places like restaurants and gyms, and including, of course, theaters, cinemas, and outdoor cultural events that number above 50 people. The exemptions for now include museums and libraries, among other services listed as essential or being outdoors. So the managers of arts venues like theaters will have to download the companion app, VaxiCode Verif, which will be used to scan your VaxiCode app. If you are double vaccinated, you can enter the establishment. If you're not, you can't. iOS or Apple operating systems were the first to get access, and I was able to set my status in a couple of minutes yesterday morning. The Android update is on its way, and for those without smartphones, you can print out your QR code and use that. Or, if you can go to the theater with someone who has the app, they can add your status to their VaxiCode and scan you both in. Hopefully, arts organizers with events starting September 1st, like the first interview tonight, will be ready to go with no glitches or hiccups. For now, there is a grace period for the first 2 weeks of the month before small business owners or event managers could face fines for not enforcing the rules. They range in a couple thousands of dollars. And other provinces are following suit, like Manitoba and British Columbia, as are venues like the stadium where the Blue Jays play in Toronto, and that city's international film festival, TIFF, which is just about to start. Quebec is actually way ahead of the curve here in Canada, and it's a way to encourage non-vaccinated people to get their shots, and it's also a way for people with their vaccines, like myself, and hopefully you as well, to continue to live your life as normally as possible. But for now, as the pandemic continues, looks like VaxiCode will be part of your theater-going experience, as essential as your mask and hand sanitizer. On to tonight's show. Emily Monet grew up in the Outaouais, as well as Brittany, France, where her father is from. Her mother, who grew up speaking English, is Anishinaabe. Emily is now based in Montreal, also known as Muniyang in Anishinaabe Mohin, a third language Emily speaks and is continuing to learn. Her one-woman ode to reclaiming language and history is called Okinum. In Anishinaabe Mohin, the word translates to dam, like a beaver dam. Emily uses this as a metaphor here for both breaking down barriers and growing to trust herself. It's inspired by a recurring dream she's had, and it's been fueled by outdoor and inner exploration. First presented in 2018 at the Théâtre Aujourd'hui, Okinum has won rave reviews in French, winning the 2021 Indigenous Voices Award for Prose in French. Now it's getting its English language premiere of sorts at Centaur Theatre's Brave New Look series next week. Emily presents her show in her three languages, Anishinaabemowin, English, and French, with surtitles, of course. This is a co-production by Onishka and Imago Theatre. Imago, as you know, specializes in stories about unstoppable women, and Onishka presents stories through an Indigenous lens while building relationships between Indigenous artistic communities and their English and French counterparts. Onishka itself translates to Wake Up. Monet founded her company back in 2011. I spoke with Emily before a rehearsal earlier this week. Welcome to Upstage, Emily. Thank you so much for taking the time. We're catching you just before a rehearsal, I believe.
Yes. I'm full in rehearsals right now. It's pretty crazy.
How are you feeling heading into this show? It's your English language premiere.
Yeah, it is. The show is still a trilingual show. So there's still a lot of French and way more Anishinaabemowin than in the first incarnation of the work. But I also have to get into the French again because I'm going to be performing at the NAC in the week of the 15th to the 18th of September. And so I have three shows in English and then I have three shows in French. So it's kind of a, you know, my mind organization kind of to juggle the two versions at the same time, but I still have a bit of time.
It's really impressive to hear people switch between languages, never mind two, but three. And that's what you're doing here. Why was it important to incorporate English, French, and also Anishinaabemowin into this piece?
Well, because they form the three languages of my identity. My father is French from France, and my mother is Anishinaabe, Algonquin. And so she doesn't speak Anishinaabemowin, but my grandfather does. And she was raised in English. So the three languages make up of my identity. So I wanted to include those three languages. And also because I find that Indigenous languages are not heard enough on stages. And I find that how can I say in English? I believe they should just be more present and people should be hearing the sounds of language because it's the languages that are born from this territory. So it's really important that we have space to include them.
I wholeheartedly agree. And thank you for doing this kind of work because I think it is bringing different perspectives to our audiences, either ones they didn't grow up with or maybe ones that they did and are reconnecting with. I was wondering about how you learned to speak Anishinaabemowin. You said your mother didn't grow up speaking it. Your grandfather did. Were there classes that were put in place or is this something you encountered when you were older?
Yeah, it's more of a recent initiative of mine too. So I've started I would say 8 years ago. And it started, we had kind of a language nest that we created in Montreal. We're all women, all Algonquin, Anishinaabe women. And we would meet at each other's places. And our teacher, her name is Véronique Tusky. And we would meet with her maybe once a week or every 2 weeks. And we would learn language together. And then with Native Montreal, they have classes that they offer for the community. So I've continued with them and also with Véronique on my own. So having private lessons with her.
And the title of your show, Okinum, is an Anishinaabe word. It means mm-hmm. dam.
Beaver dam. Yeah.
It means it's very central to the whole crux of the story. So why don't you walk us through this beautiful story that you're unfolding?
Yeah, so Okinum is based on this recurrent dream that I've had three times of a beaver, a giant beaver the size of a black bear that comes and visit me in my dream and tells me something and gives me something too. And I've had this dream three times, the exact same dream. So it's always felt like it was an important dream and I wanted to decipher it. And then Okinum, well, it is the word for dam. So that became became kind of a metaphor for the journey that one's embarked to get away all those pieces of woods or the blockages that we all have, the inner blockades that we have, and what is the journey to remove these pieces of wood so that the water of memory can flow again. So it's really kind of a poetic take on these issues, and the beaver kind of is my guide in this.
I'm wondering, getting this dream the first time, you know, as an artist in the creative process, was it just kind of like, oh, I had a dream, that's interesting, okay, it happens a second time? Maybe by the third time you start to realize, like, you know, you're getting a message of some sort, but how does that translate into, I want to pursue this creatively and do something with this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think dreams are really my main source of inspiration. I have a practice of really writing them down. And so I have many journals of dreams. And sometimes I let them, you know, sit there, and then I'll pick one up after some time. And I'm always fascinated about what comes out. There's always like strong, strange associations that you can make. Or I feel very lucky and grateful for the dreams I have. I have really vivid dreams, and I have a lot of like words that are being whispered to me in my dreams. So it's just something that I really like, to just be able to figure out what it means. And I find that art or my practice is a way to kind of dive into them and find or reveal the meaning. And so I felt I was inspired or called by this dream, and I felt I wanted to write about it. And that's really how it started.
I'm speaking with Emily Monet, who is presenting Okinam at the Centaur Theatre as part of Brave New Looks in early September. Emily, what happens with your creative process once you said you keep dream journals and you sometimes let things sit? And once you've chosen to maybe follow a dream to pick up a thread, how does your process as an artist evolve?
I think my practice is, it's mostly in theater, but it really comes from an interdisciplinary perspective. So I really like when all the mediums, the different languages can come together and create its own language. So I've been working very closely with sound designer Jackie Galland from the beginning. And I've always loved to record sound. So I've recorded lots of sounds of beavers all the time, and nature, and also my Anishinaabe Mohan lessons too. So that's always been a very big part of my process, to integrate all those recordings, audio recordings, and see how they can really coexist with live text or more poetry, and have them all integrated to kind of create a new language, basically. So I'm hoping that this play is more, it feels more like an experience than being you know, a witness of something, but that we're all living a collective experience together throughout this performance.
Well, I just want to cite some of the praise for your show, the French version that you performed earlier on. Le Devoir called it a vast healing ritual, impossible not to be moved. So you're talking about on the grand scheme of bringing the audience together through something, and clearly it's very effective. I wanted to touch on the live sound that you're recording. I'm wondering where you went to go get live sound. Were you possibly looking to find beavers or beaver dams? I know they're very elusive creatures, so I don't know if this question is coming out of nowhere.
Well, no, I have a special connection to beavers, the Amik. So they kind of show up when I'm looking for them, or when I'm hoping to find them. So I often have a recorder with me, and I just pulled it out. There was also a beaver sanctuary next to Wakefield, so in the Outaouais. So I went to visit over there. I didn't get recordings, but the owner of the place, he had a lot of footage. Like, he put a GoPro into the Beaver Lodge. Wow. So he gifted me with all that footage. So that was a nice gift. So and then, you know, I go and pay my visits and ask permission to record them, and then often they show up and they allow me to record their sounds. But I also went there's Wild Animal Zoo in like Lac Saint-Jean. Mm-hmm. And so I went there with a friend from Master Yash, and we were able to get our mic right on the nose of the beaver. So then we have all these great sounds, and then of course Jackie makes her own sounds and transforms them to make something really unique.
And she's an incredibly talented artist and has a lot of rooting in rock music as well.
Yeah.
Alternative sounds. Is that a little bit why you've chosen to work with Jackie?
Yeah. Well, yeah, totally. Like, I really like her work with synths and just kind of her punk approach kind of to music. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was always very in awe of her talent and her versatility. And I was invited, when was it? It was in 2017, I think. I was invited to Argentina and Uruguay and Paraguay to present something. And I decided, oh, well, I have this new piece that I'm working on and I could present a work in progress. So Jackie came with me. So I feel, you know, we've embarked on this adventure together since the beginning. She's very much part of the piece, yeah.
I'm speaking with Emily Monet, who is presenting Okinawa at the Centaur Theatre in early September. I'm curious about going out into being outdoors and being rooted in the moment, the observations you're taking in. When we come back to a theatre space and you're presenting in front of an audience, before you start a show, do you do anything to kind of root yourself, to take yourself back to being outdoors, being near a beaver dam, you know, to really evoke that feeling in yourself as you hit the stage?
Well, it's hard to do it in Montreal because you don't have access to nature in the same way, but but yeah, I do have my own kind of rituals or ways to get into the mode, the performance mode, and to be really connected to what I'm saying. I mean, I'm right now I'm really in the work and trying to get all my lines good and my songs, and so yeah, I guess I'm really, really in the work right now. So I'm supposing that the days of the performances I will find ways to ground myself into being able to share it the most generously possible.
Well, Emily, can't wait to see that actual performance. I've heard so many wonderful things about it. So thank you so much for taking the time today and break a leg on this performance, your English language world premiere. But of course, there's three languages on stage. Wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much. Merci, Miigwech.
That was Emily Monet, the writer, creator, and performer of Okinawa. The English language version of her show premieres September 2nd at Centaur Theatre for its Brave New Look series, running until September 11th. For tickets, call 514-288-3161 or visit centaurtheatre.com. You can learn more about Emily's company at onishka.org, O-N-I-S-H-K-A. Imago is at imagotheatre.ca. Okinawa also kicks off Centaur's new season, which was just previewed for the first time yesterday, with the return of outdoor shows, the Wildside Fest, and a project called Plays to Perform at Home, with more shows planned for this season as well. I discuss some of that upcoming season with Jim Burke, the Montreal Gazette theatre critic, later this hour. I'm Sarah De'Ay, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. The pandemic is not an ideal time to celebrate an anniversary year. Many companies, including Geordie and Black Theatre Workshop, have had to hold muted celebrations. And the Marionnette Plein La Rue Festival is also marking its 10th edition with an adjusted schedule, but with just as much heart. The annual fest is held in Verdun, in conjunction with Promenade Wellington, the business group that programs events on the main street, with over 200 businesses and 50 restos on its 1.3-kilometer pedestrianized strip. The Puppets are back for live outdoor shows this year down Wellington, but to deal with pandemic requirements, most of the show times are not announced in advance, so it's kind of a lottery to come across a performance. But the silver lining, according to programming director Myriam LaRose, is that she finds audience members are taking their time with the street performances, a kind of slow puppetry, if you will, less rushing from one bit to the next, and more wonder, more mindfulness. I spoke with Myriam just before she went down to the fest late last week. Welcome, Myriam, to Upstage. It's lovely to speak with you. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
And congratulations on the 10th edition of Festival Mariette Plein la Rue. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. In the context, you know, with the COVID and everything, the living arts are kind of important, and it's rare to have the chance to organize or participate in that kind of event in this context.
Absolutely. Can you tell us about the beginnings of the festival, how it got started?
Yep. It's Billy Walsh, the Promenade Wellington director, that like 11 years ago, thought that it would be fun to, instead of having clowns and balloons and hot dogs, and I have nothing against clowns and balloons and hot dogs, but he thought that it would be a great idea to bring puppets on the street. And he was totally amazed by puppets, but don't really know a lot about them. So he came to us at the time I had the company, and he was like, hey, I want to do this. Can you help me out with this? And as a company, we did not have time to do this. But Evelyn Fournier, which is a great Quebecer puppeteer, went like, oh, I'm going to help you out. So they worked together for the first 5 editions. And the festival just like grow. It turns out to be a great opportunity in the puppetry field in Quebec for young artists or even established artists to create like new stuff. Like, I have an idea. I'm going to do this for Festival Marionnette Plein la Rue. I'm going to show it in the street. I'll have the public feedback, and then I'll work it best and turn into more, I would say, established festivals. So that's how it begins. But from time to time, it ended up a little bit differently. I mean that young artists and all more established artists are still doing this. Like, I have an idea and I want to show it up in the street at Plein la Rue. But there's also more finished shows now. There is, you know, the purpose of the festival is to show the widest range of what we can do in contemporary puppetry. So it's a great opportunity for every puppetry artist to show something that was hidden in the closet or something that really works and were one of the festival that present their show. I don't know if I'm clear about that, but that's how it grows from time to time. And it's a celebration. Like, people are happy to see puppetry in the street, but artists are happy now to come and celebrate puppetry together.
Yeah, that's absolutely crystal clear how you're explaining it. I'm curious to know, what is it about the festival that makes it a place where somebody wants to try out something new or, you know, get their start? Is it because it's outdoors?
A little bit. But without COVID, we usually have like old garage or public parkings. We can do like black box to welcome like more technical shows. It's not only on the street usually, but the thing that makes the festival so special, it's because it's all about short forms. Since 5 years, we only present short forms. So it's 35 minute less shows. So as a person that don't know nothing about puppetry, You go there, it's totally free. You see a show, you don't like it, you don't mind. It lasts 15 minutes and then you see something else. And maybe the second thing that you see makes you appreciate best the first thing. So it's like it's weird as a comparison, but a bag of chips, you know, you eat one first chip and then you just eat more and more and more and more. And at the end, well, you're filled. But yeah, it's the variety of the proposition and the creativity of the artist, because actually artists in Quebec are really, in Canada, in Quebec, are really good with puppetry.
Yes.
And it's so vivid. It's so impressive to see an object without life coming to life, you know?
Absolutely.
For everyone, like, you don't know about puppetry, but you appreciate that.
I'm totally with you on that. I'm speaking with Myriam Larose, who's the programming director of the Festival Mariette Plein La Rue, celebrating its 10th edition. And you're kind of explaining to us why exactly the festival is such a potent place for new work and for mm-hmm. people starting out. And you were talking about the variety of how, like, I love your analogy of a bag of chips, trying one thing and then you can't stop.
Yep.
Can you lay out some of the diversity of work we're going to be seeing during the 10th edition? You also talked about the pandemic a couple of seconds ago, so maybe also what we're going to expecting to see, and then maybe we can get into how the pandemic is still influencing how you set up this festival.
Yep. Well, because it's our 10th edition, we have we're welcoming two shows that have been presented in the festival in the previous editions. So it's one of them is Le Ciel Rue from the exquisite company Toxic Trottoir. It's a show that it's a big show. It's a big show. It's like when you go in Europe in the in big place where there's like huge show and people are gathering together. It's that kind of show. Well, it's a COVID edition, so people will need to make reservation for their bubble in order to see the show. So it makes the thing a little bit different. But I'm pretty sure that together people will have the feeling of our previous life, you know, when you were walking on the street and wow, bam, this big thing happened. It's a really creative, really Clunesque, really poetic at the same time show.
Right.
It's more object show than puppet show.
Okay.
Not object theater, but and in French we would say it's marionnettique.
Okay.
There's no marionette, but the way they use
ordinary things.
Yeah. But not as object theater.
Okay.
So I don't want to get people mixed up. about it, but it's a big show. It's really, really interesting to see, and people were so amazed when we presented it the first time that we were like, okay, this is a show that we want to present for our 10th anniversary.
So that's the the big closing show in the weekend of September.
No, it's not the big closing show. It's one of the show that people can see on the last weekend.
Okay.
In order to get ticket, because maybe it's important to talk about ticketry, the Wednesday before the show, so the Wednesday before the Saturday, because it happens every Friday and Saturdays every weekend from August 20th till September 4th. So on the Wednesday, people can make a reservation on the Facebook, the Promenade Wellington Facebook pages or the website. And it's a free reservation, but they need to show up in order to see the show. Am I clear? Maybe not.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes? Okay. On Friday, it's all wandering. So people can go into a bar, into a restaurant and have a drink, celebrate. And at one point, boom, they're going to see something.
Okay.
There's going to be puppet wandering on the street on Friday. And on Saturday, it's always like a ticketry thing. So if they go on the website or on the Facebook page on Wednesday, they're going to be able to have places for Saturday. And on September 11th in the morning, that's our closing show. It's not free. It's $6 tickets, all taxes include. And it's the magnificent Les Saisons du Poulain from Le Théâtre de l'Oeil. It's a long string puppet show. It's you have no chance to see that kind of show in Quebec or elsewhere anymore. It's really rare to see that. And it's a long form. So people, if people come and see like short forms on weekend one, weekend two, weekend three, then whoop, they can end it up with the long form. It's a 50-minute show.
And the reason the, I'm speaking with Myriam LaRose of Festival Marionnette Plein La Rue, the reason the long string puppets, it's kind of rare to see that now, is that just because it's kind of an older art form of puppetry, or is it just harder to do today?
I would say both.
Okay.
Yeah, it's another way of doing puppetry. Maybe it needs more skills or different skills than table puppet or than other kind of puppet. And sometimes people think that it's not contemporary to use that kind of old puppet, but I think that it's not the medium that you are using that makes your show contemporary or not. Les Saisons du Poulain have been created like 40 years ago.
Right.
And the Théâtre de l'Oeil did a rewriting, une réécriture of the show.
Yep.
So it's not like object theater. It's not what you see usually as contemporary puppetry show. But I think that the story, the themes, these are all things that can still reach out children and adults.
And maybe it's maybe it'll be back in vogue at some point. Somebody will see the show on the 11th
I think
of September,
so.
And it'll.
I think so.
New.
Yeah. And when Irina Nicolescu first created that show, it was considered like a contemporary show because these puppets aren't used like long string puppet as usual.
Okay.
They are not built as long string puppet, like traditional long strings puppet.
Gotcha.
So they're still a little bit, they're still contemporary, I think. Maybe not the way the story have been told, but I think that some things are kind of universal and did not get dusty with the time.
Miriam, I'm wondering if the pandemic, is it getting frustrating at all to be planning things so differently from what you would normally do? Like you can't actually tell people when they can see the puppetry in the streets, right? Like you can't have a schedule.
Yeah.
Like, is that getting to you or is it just kind of like part of what, you know, your job is right now?
Yeah, actually the pandemic have been good with us.
Okay.
Good
to hear.
Last year there was nothing going on and we got to cancel, you know, the festival. And on June 24th, the Ministre de la Culture said, oh, well, theaters are open. And Billy Walsh called me and he was like, are you game? Like, yeah, we can do it. So within a month, I did like 6 times the programming.
Wow.
Because the rules were changing like from days to days, from week to week. But at the end, what we did, it changes the way we wanted to do the festival. You know, usually we were welcoming like 20 artists, 60 shows within 2 days. And we were like just running and welcoming and showing. And because it's short form, sometimes people weren't happy with the fact that with the fact that they can't attend the show because it was like full.
Okay.
But actually, the ticketry and the fact that there's no schedule makes people happier with like free shows.
Oh, I don't know why.
Yeah. And the fact that it spread over a month, it makes things like lighter for us. But at the same time, people are coming back and they have time to digest and they are craving about seeing a new show again. So it has good sides. I would say that I'm dreaming about like a crowd, but it's not for this year.
Absolutely. Hopefully it will be for next year. But yeah, I think it is good to hear you. It's good to look on the silver lining always, right? To look on the positive side. And I think what you're saying is really interesting, that people are kind of perhaps just appreciating what they have and in the moment, or being more present rather than thinking, what else could I be seeing right now? Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we found last year. Like with the wandering, especially, like usually people were like, where's the next? I want to see another puppet. And now they're just like following the character on the street and people are paying attention about what the puppetry is doing.
Oh, wow.
And that's living art, you know? That's a relationship between the audience and the artist and the puppet. And this is really touching. It's not like going into a shopping center and say, I want to buy more. I want to see more. So yeah, it has good. It's good. It changes that way. Yeah.
Slow puppetry.
Slow spectator, slow audience. Yeah. Contemplation.
You know,
there's an artist behind that wants to say something. Yeah.
One last thing. It's really hot out right now. And I'm just wondering, when puppeteers go out in the streets, do they have to take extra care, drink lots of water and take care of themselves when they're faced with really high humidity?
Yeah. Like every human. But yeah, we're paying attention about that. Offering like water and refreshment and AC and everything to make the safest space for artists. And for the audience in Verdun, there's the shore, there's the beach, which is exquisite too. And it's maybe a good reason to come and see puppetry and go to the beach after or before.
The perfect combination. Myriam, thank you so much for telling us about the 10th edition. Congratulations.
My pleasure.
As well as this beautiful idea of slow spectator. I love that.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of wordless show. There's a lot of wordless show for, everyone.
And that slows you down a little bit.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you on Promenade Wellington.
Thank you so much.
That was Myriam Larose, Programming Director of Festival Marionette Plein La Rue. It continues until September 4th with all kinds of puppets hitting the streets, with a closing show that will require reservations at Quay 5160. That's happening on September 11th. Check them out on their Facebook page. And there are other outdoor events on Promenade Wellington, promenadewellington.com for more information. I'm Sarah De A, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. The very first show I saw this year after the theaters were allowed to reopen was Every Brilliant Thing at the Siegel Center, a one-man show that incorporates a lot of audience interaction. At some point, I was selected to perform the role of the main character's girlfriend, just for a couple of moments. I had to produce a book, and I just happened to have Groucho Marx's memoir on me. And another audience member volunteered their paperback to my boyfriend so we could act out their very first conversation on stage. The other guy in the audience with a book on him? Jim Burke, the theater critic at the Montreal Gazette, and happy to say, a friend of mine. I love bumping into Jim to compare notes at shows. I asked him to share his predictions with me on what might be an uncertain yet remarkable fall season for theater. I spoke with Jim earlier this week, and just a note, this conversation was before the vaccine passport was officially announced. Hello, Jim. Welcome back to Upstage. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you. It's good to hear from you again.
Nice to speak with you as well. So I wanted to have you on to look ahead to what could be another very unusual season for theater in Montreal and in Quebec. What are your thoughts here in the last week of August, the last full week? You know, normally we'd be gearing up for big openings in a couple of weeks from now. It's not quite the same scenario, is it?
No. Of course, there's always the uncertainty about, you know, there's a lot of announcements of theatres opening up on the Anglo and the Francophone side, but there's always that uncertainty about, you know, not necessarily will shows still go ahead, but in what kind of shape and form they will go ahead and what kind of experience it will be for the audience. But I think it's going to be, anyway, I don't want to make predictions about things being better this time around, but it looks as though we're in a better position than we were a few months ago. So I'm fairly confident that we'll get a reasonably decent season this fall, hopefully. Touch wood.
Touch wood. Knock on whatever it is you need to knock on. Yeah, it seems like it's uncertain, but it's not as uncertain. Like, there's not really so much question, is this even going to happen? It's just, what capacity is it going to happen in? As you just said, something else we're seeing is a lot of theater companies are announcing their seasons this week, last week, you know, in the next little while. That's so weird, right? Because normally you get all of your seasonal announcements in the spring looking ahead to fall, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And there are a few companies that would have liked to have maybe previewed today, but we're still waiting on some of them to finalize the press releases, understandably. But, you know, we've heard from, we are hearing from Centaur this week, but, you know, there's some shows we can talk about today, maybe. Infinite Theatre have already announced some shows on the Francophone side. They seem to be more ahead of the Anglophone side as far as announcing shows. So there's a lot that we can anticipate that's coming up, but we're still waiting on some theatres to let us know what's going to happen.
And I think I would scratch that up to resources, right? Just for the size of your organization. I think that French theaters maybe are just a bit bigger perhaps than the English theaters.
Yeah.
Polls have also shown that Anglophone Quebecers have been overall more cautious and more worried about the virus. So I wonder if there's also a cultural thing perhaps in kind of waiting.
Yeah, I wondered that. I mean, there was, you know, some of the Francophone theatres were, in the first few months last year, they were opening up a lot quicker than the Anglophone theatres. But like you say, a lot of that was to do with the size of the theatres, and they could spread people out more. They had more resources to do in-person shows and online shows. So I'm not sure if it's so much a cultural thing. I don't know if it means that we're more nervous than the Francophone side, or it is more a case of resources. That's a study for somebody, that's beyond my scope. That's a study for somebody else, I think, yeah.
Oh, but it's fun sometimes to play amateur sociologist.
Shows.
I'm speaking with Jim Burke, who is the theater critic at the Montreal Gazette, and we're looking ahead to the coming theater season, which traditionally always kind of restarts, kicks off back in September. And what's unusual this year is that we're getting all of the season look aheads in mid to late August, when normally we would have had this information back in April, May, June around. Harkening back to what you were saying about safety, I didn't want to suggest that no one is taking anything not seriously. I saw a tweet months ago saying, if you want the vaccine rollout done right, entrust it to a bunch of stage managers and everything will get done, no questions asked. I think that there's something to be really proud of in seeing how well theaters have handled all of the health and safety protocol that have come with putting on shows. You have seen things live. Have you felt comfortable, like in terms of walking into a space? I've always felt really safe going into theaters.
I have, yeah. I mean, partly it's because you can feel that the staff are really taking it seriously. I mean, I think probably one of the first shows I saw indoors was when they remounted Mob again back in March, I think it was. And you really felt as though they'll space you out outside when you queue in to get in. And when you go in, they were kind of, you know, herded, well, maybe herd is the wrong word, because we weren't very numerous in there, but they were making sure that, so it was almost like, you know, a kind of choreography about certain people go this way, other people go that way, and the spacing once you're in the theatre, and obviously the masks and the cleaning your hands. And I felt that with the Fringe Festival as well. I saw you a couple of times out at the Fringe Festival. And I think Amy Blackmore came up with this term of something like radical hospitality they were talking about, where they were, you know, really strict, but in a really welcoming way of you know, encouraging people to abide by the protocols, but also making sure everybody, all the audience members, were completely clear about what they were supposed to do. And because obviously you're a little bit nervous about, are you gonna do something that's a little bit of a kind of, a risky activity. You're going to forget to wash your hands and things like that. But in all the theatres have been so far, they've been, the staff have been really on the ball.
I wanted to ask if there was anything that you had seen during the pandemic that you especially loved, despite, you know, all of the restrictions and the changes.
Yeah, there was a couple of shows I saw in the Fringe that I really enjoyed. I don't know if you saw Spiral at Le Petit Campus, and that was a kind of one person show that was all based around, you know, the Rube Goldberg contraptions, like the Mousetrap Game, that kind of thing. That was an interesting show. I think the first show that I saw in the Fringe was the Choral Poetry Project, which almost had a kind of, I wouldn't say religious feel, but it was almost like a kind of ritual for welcoming people back into the theatre. So that was a very nice feeling. I enjoyed the Black Theatre Workshop show they put on, which was a kind of rap battle that they put on in a show near...
in Little Burgundy.
I enjoyed that so much that I wanted more of it. And apparently it was a 10-minute section of what's going to be a much bigger play.
Just a teaser for a bigger show to come.
I saw Strawberries in January at Hudson Village Theatre. I think I enjoyed the experience of going to that more than I actually enjoyed the play. I mean, it was, to be honest, it was a little bit too saccharine for me, the show itself. I hate to sound cynical, but it was a kind of very kind of sweet pastiche on French romantic comedies, a bit Jacques Demy kind of show. But it was the mood of the evening that was quite delightful there. I mean, it was in Hudson Village, and it's always lovely to go there. And after the show, they kind of set out tables, and there were fairy lights, and there were drink and wine, and it was a very nice atmosphere.
It's funny how atmosphere has almost counts for as much as the show itself. Do you think that's going to change how we enjoy theatre in the next few months?
Yeah, I don't know how long that will last, because I think there is part of this whole thing of welcoming people back. And I think theatres at the moment seem to be putting on shows that are really quite feel good. I think they're trying to counter the pretty dark mood that everybody seems to be in these days. I mean, having said that, you know, I just mentioned the Black Theatre Workshop show, which was about the killing of a young black guy by a policeman, which obviously wasn't a very feel-good show, but I mean, it was the whole atmosphere around it as well. It was, you know, great to go to that park, and it was very welcoming, and it had a real almost like party atmosphere around the show. So yeah, I mean, maybe the big pause that people have been undergoing has kind of made people think more about what theatre is for and how they can, you know, entice audiences back, because, you know, get them away from Netflix binges. So I think theatre companies are maybe thinking quite hard about not just the material they're going to put on, but how to make it a kind of, you know, make the whole experience of going to the theatre feel more an event, maybe.
Yeah, more like stepping out and really getting a full, interesting experience, and unlike anything that you've seen at home. We've also had a lot of reckoning with issues of race, who's privileged and who's not. And I'm wondering if those serious undertones are going to be explored over the coming years as well, with the pandemic kind of shaking up a lot of people's status quo.
You know, that's one of the few silver linings you can get out of this, is that it did allow people a long, long pause to think about, you know, representation on stage and diversity, which is obviously something that a lot of people in Montreal were thinking of, but I think it gave people an opportunity to really almost like kind of shake the kaleidoscope and see what happens on the other side of it. I mean, just when you look at something like Strawberries in January, I mean, Dean Patrick Fleming, who directed that, I always remember him giving a speech at the Metters one time where he was, you know, he'd worked very hard at creating a space at Geordie that was thinking seriously about diversity. And he said something about he's looking forward to when they get to that place where diversity is no longer an issue, when you go and see a play with people of colour and you kind of don't think, why is this certain actor in this role? And there was a little bit of that with Strawberries in January, which was traditionally a French comedy pastiche, and he deliberately cast it, you know, the four parts with people of colour, which you would maybe not necessarily see in that kind of a play or in that kind of an old French movie. And again, it's that kind of thing where he's deliberately cast it like that, but in a way where the audience are encouraged not to think about it while they're watching it. So there's that kind of tension between, you know, necessarily drawing an audience's attention to who is being cast on stage, but also hoping that an audience is, you know, not making a big deal about it while they're watching it. So right. It's one of those things where we've had a lot of shows that are looking at the Black experience and the Asian experience. And I think there's a lot of plays this season that are looking at the Indigenous experience. And there seems to be a lot of movement in that direction. And you look at the play that Centaur opening with in September, which is in their Brave New Works slot, which is a play called Okina, which is a one-person show, which is about, I think it's in French and in English and Anishinaabe Mohin languages. And obviously, it's about Indigenous issues, and I think it translates as dam, like a beaver dam. So it's looking at the environment and health and from a Indigenous perspective. As you say, it's given the theatre world the opportunity to think about diversity, but also, you know, with the whole Me Too thing that was going on as well, obviously thinking about workspace practices as well. And that seems to be a big thing that's happening within theatres as well.
I'm really excited about this Indigenous reckoning of the theatre space. So I'm wondering if there's anything looking ahead that you're very excited for this coming season.
So at Centaur, I think they're doing a repeat of Portico projects this year, calling Portico Exchange. Again, it's being performed outside the theatre, using those classical columns outside Centaur Theatre. I think it's something to do with the fact that it was the old Stock Exchange building. So that's why they called it Portico Exchange this year.
And I think that'll be a nice kind of reset, because Portico last year was ground to a halt in September when cases arose and
you
can't go through with this.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the uncertainty about, I mean, we're hoping it's going to go smoothly this year, this season, but you never know with fourth wave. Theatres are always worried about, you know, kind of putting all these hours in rehearsal and then at the end of the day it gets closed down, which brings me to Tableau D'Hôte's show On Point. They're doing season two this year, which is a series of outdoor shows, very short shows. And I was talking to the director, writer of those shows, Matthew Murphy Perron. And one of the things that he was saying is that these shows were created in a much shorter space of time than you would have with a major production. So if for some reason, obviously for specific reasons, the shows were shut down, which would be sad, but it wouldn't be as much of a heartbreak if he'd put hours and hours into writing the shows and hours of rehearsals. So it's almost like a very kind of hastily constructed show that's tailored for these times, maybe. And maybe that's, again, something that I don't know if things like that will carry on after the pandemic, but things like that are almost like teaching theatre makers to kind of get around certain circumstances. And maybe some of the things like that will carry on after the pandemic, this idea of a quickly constructed, hastily thrown together show, like putting on a show in very emergency circumstances.
And outdoors or in a different place, there's a whole kind of strand of creativity that's emerged that is admirable and exciting.
Oh, Infinite Theatre, they have something coming up. Two family shows. When I say family, I mean in terms of shows about families. There's an actor called Mohsen El Gharbi, who's putting on an autobiographical show about travelling from Montreal to Tunisia to see his paternal grandmother. And I think it's supposed to be a bit of a black comedy. So I've heard good things about this show, which has been produced a few times in French, and this is a English translation of this show, which is happening in November. And then soon after that, there's a show called Silence of Sky. When we say silence, it means like spelled in like a sigh, when you sigh, Silence of Sky, which is by the mask and mime performer who did a show called Love Child a few years ago. Cirque Alphonse are coming back again. I don't know if you've seen them do their shows before. They did one called Babu and a show called, am I allowed to say this word? Did a show called Tabanak a while ago.
Yes. Oh, I love their work. It's so fun.
Yeah. So they're kind of very kind of irreverent Quebec folk kind of circus. Yes. They kind of play kind of folk rock music live while they're performing. So they're coming back to Tohu. I think that's sometime in November, I think. I'll have to check up on that. Hudson Village Theatre have another show come in, a show called The Blonde, the Brunette and the Vengeful Redhead. Apparently seven characters, which are all being performed by Lenny Parker, which seems to be a kind of noir black comedy, which is an Australian show, apparently, which was first performed by Jackie Weaver. I don't know if you know the...
the Australian actor.
She was in Animal Kingdom and big movies.
And the advantage to doing a solo show like that is you only have one actor to worry about on stage.
I mean, that's another thing that we've been seeing a lot of. We've been seeing a lot of solo shows, like Every Brilliant Thing and... Underneath the Lintel was one of the first shows that came out. Yeah, obviously for safety reasons, and maybe again a little bit like I was saying about shows that might have to close down. It's less of a pain to close them down when you just have one performer. There's plenty happening theoretically, and it looks a lot more. I won't use the word certain, but a lot more likely this time around, but we shall see.
We'll catch you in the Montreal Gazette, Jim. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Great to speak to you again.
That was Gazette Theatre critic Jim Burke. Follow him on Twitter at Funhouse Theatre and read him in the Montreal Gazette in print or online at montrealgazette.com. Looking ahead to this weekend and next week for things to do, you can check out the solo dance festival Oser en Solo, presented by the Agora de la Danse and Cas par Cas. That is a one-on-one dance show, or it's actually one or two audience members in a surprise location. The Festival des Arts des Ruelles, FAR, wraps up this weekend. The world's smallest open mic at Hurley's Pub on Crescent on Friday evening. And the Siegel Center presents its final Sunday session, a free outdoor show at 3 p.m. This time, it's going to be the Innu Québécois singer Katia Rock. Tickets are free, but you should reserve at siegelcenter.org. The Siegel also presents its season on Wednesday, September 1st at 6:30 on Facebook and YouTube, so you can tune into that. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Emily Monet presents the trilingual Okinam al Centaur, Miriam Larose of Festival Marionette Plein La Rue, and Gazette Theatre critic Jim Burke. A big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under Archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Don't forget to download your VaxiCode app, and we'll speak next time.
Shalom Aleichem. On August 29th at 2 p.m., live music returns to Montreal as the Klez Canada Festival moves to Marché de Percibe à l'Entrepôt 77 Bernard East. The lineup includes Briga and her Balkan Turbo Folk, Yiddish songs with So-Called and Warhol Dervish, Romani and Sephardic music with Taraf Siriana, It's all part of a week-long hybrid festival that starts on August 23rd online with concerts and workshops, where you can learn klezmer trumpet from Frank London, klezmer fiddle from Alicia Spiegels, and so much more. To register, go to klezcanada.org and join us for a CKUT Pop Montreal co-production at Marché de Passib à l'Entrepôt 77, 77 Bernard East on August 29th. Me velen zachsein dort. We'll see you there soon.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The Association des Services de Réhabilitation Sociale du Québec is filing a class action suit. If you were strip searched between July 13, 2006 and July 1, 2011, if you were in one of the following facilities, Bordeaux, Rivière-des-Prairies, Roberval, Saint-Jérôme, or the male sector of Quebec City, you may be able to be part of this claim. For complete details, go to asrsq.ca/class action. That's asrsq.ca/class action. Claims must be filed before January 16th, 2022.
Sam's excited to see his favorite band play live. He's thought about it all week. He bought his ticket. He wore his band t-shirt. He went to the concert venue. He wasn't allowed inside the concert venue. He put away his band t-shirt. He threw away his ticket. And he thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. Beginning in September, you'll need a vaccination passport to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening and welcome to the August 26th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we're presenting a lecture entitled Questions and Answers on American Sadism. It was recorded in Troy, New York, on June 27th of this year. The lecture is by Chris Hedges. He's an award-winning journalist who has reported from the Balkans, the Middle East, and Central America. He writes a weekly column for SheerPost.com. That's SCHEERPOST.com. And he's the host of On Contact on RTTV. He's the author of a number of books, including Death of the Liberal Class, Wages of Rebellion, America, The Farewell Tour, and Our Class, Trauma and Transformation in an American Prison. So without further